Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. For the next hour, for the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, your number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by 11-time Pro Bowler and also Hall of Fame semifinalist Willie Rowe. And all we're going to talk football with him. And also, expected to be joined by LPGA member, author, motivational speaker, actress, Robin Aiken. So, busy show. And we're also going to sneak in a little LeBron James talk as he prepares to go to Cleveland tomorrow night. And that should be an interesting scene and an interesting showcase there. Jeremy?
Paul.
How are you?
Dude, I'm doing, Paul. I'm out there, you know, and I said last week, you know, Michael Vick might be exposed by the blitz, and you didn't want to listen.
But he wasn't exposed by a blitz. I don't think he was exposed. He can't be exposed if he's over 300 yards. But, you know.
Paul, how'd he play? How'd he play, Paul?
He played okay to me.
How'd he play?
You're talking about top-notch football, a top-notch defense in Chicago, and the Bears did a good job of I don't think
the Bears,
shut Michael Vick.
Bears defense.
You can't say
Bears defense is better than
shut,
Eagles offense.
You can't say you shut somebody down when you get over 400 yards in total offense. So I don't say you shut them down, but 398 total yards, darn near 400 yards total offense. But if you look at the situation, I mean. It was a game that came down to one play in a lot of ways. And no game really comes down to one play, but this game came down to that play at the end of the half. Eagles were marching in, and then the ball was deflected, and it was picked off in the end zone. And the player returned it, and the Bears took the ball down the field, and ultimately they scored. And ultimately they went on to take a 21-13 lead going into halftime. And taking that lead, it was a 14-point swing pretty much. And it was a big play, very big play there. And the Bears ultimately went on to win. And to me, this game came down to the defense. The Eagles' defense did not show up. Jay Cutler with four touchdowns, Matt Forte, 122-yard rushing. So the Bears did their thing and give the Bears a lot of credit. But all in all, and looking at that football game, you don't expect the Eagles to win every week. But I thought there was a game that they would win. But at the same time, you're going to run into this.
Paul, it was proven if you blitz him, if you pressure him, if you get to him, he's not going to be able to make. So far, he has yet to demonstrate when he's being blitzed. He threw for 300 yards, but they made no big plays. The offense was not the same. He had an interception, he had a fumble, and they scored no touchdowns, really, in the red zone when they had three opportunities. Michael Vick was not at his best.
But I don't understand how you can say somebody was held in check when they threw for 200 yards.
Because he didn't win the game. He had a fumble and an interception. He had two turnovers, period.
He didn't. And the Bears went on to win. The Bears are 8-3. And the Bears are a team that I don't think you really have to look out for a team that I'm not ultimately impressed with. And then as an Eagles fan, I would love to see the Bears in the playoffs again. I would love to see this team again, because I think a second time around, you can definitely beat them. And also, you got to take a look at Asante Samuel not being there. A big guy they missed in the secondary.
All the defense of the Bears blitzed the offense. They didn't lose this game defensively. They lost it offensively. This is
they did enough on the offensive side of the football to win that game. The defense could not get the Bears' offense off the field.
You're going to sit around now, and I mean, I know in a week or two you'll be debuting a Michael Vick song. I mean, lest we forget, I mean, you ride them hard, Paul. I mean, you ride these jockstraps hard. I mean, Vick did not play well.
334 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He did throw that 1 interception the first week.
And he had a fumble.
Year,
right, Paul? So he had 2 turnovers.
He had four fumbles, actually, but none of them. Again, not one of. You're right. It wasn't his best performance, but also.
Coming off of last week's performance, I mean, you definitely don't look to basically repeat the same mistakes, which I felt the offense did. The offense did not at all contain the blitz. They should have known it was coming. I mean, at least by the third quarter.
But it wasn't really the blitz that did the Eagles in. It was that Bears front four. That front four of the Bears was what did it for them. I mean, they got pressure from guys like Julius Peppers and a guy who played very well in that football game. So they got pressure from guys like him. It wasn't what they did with the blitz.
I'm not going to disagree with that. And I feel like defensively the pressure. And when there was blitzing, but I just felt like the Eagles should have known that they were looking to, and maybe blitzing is the wrong word. I'm stretching that. It should be pressure.
He pressured him, Paul, and he played poorly. He threw for 300 yards, and that's great. I mean, to me,
the yards are irrelevant. He didn't play poorly.
He played poorly, Paul.
He could have done a little bit more to get the victory, but I thought also it came down to the Eagles defense not getting it done, ultimately, the Bears. Were able to get it done and ultimately move to 8-3. But I want to move on to what basically was big news was the big fight between Cortland Finnegan and Andre Johnson. I mean, that was a drag, big time barn burner there, that fight. I mean, that was a boxing match. I mean, you saw helmets flying and you saw Andre Johnson give Cortland Finnegan a 3-piece, pretty much. I mean, the only thing Johnson needed was a biscuit, pretty much. I mean, he was aggressive there, and he really went after Finnegan. 3 punches, but you look at it, both guys were only fined $25,000, and both guys were not suspended. I think it is a joke. I mean, maybe if Andre Johnson would have led with his head, or gave a headbutt to Cortland Finnegan, maybe he would have got
danced in the end zone. I mean, this is a joke. It's an atrocity. If I'm Terrell Owens, if I'm Ocho Cinco, if I'm especially, and you talk about you're relating to James Harrison, I mean, it's a joke. You're getting players that are being fined for playing the sport the same way they played it their whole career, and these two idiots on national TV, I mean, they act like they should have been suspended for a year.
You're being a little. You know.
Well, I mean, I'm a heavy-handed kind of guy.
I think just the game would have been. I don't think they should have just gotten away with a fine. I mean, that was an out-and-out fight with helmets off. I mean, and so I just think Andre Johnson and Cortland Finnegan should have been suspended at least one game for that incident. But it's funny, like I said before, maybe if Andre Johnson or maybe if Cortland Finnegan would have left with their head in this fight, they would have got suspended. Andre Johnson should not be playing tomorrow night in Philadelphia. Not after what happened there and not after what he did. I mean, regardless of what the reputation he may have in terms of being a mild-mannered guy, in terms of being an all-around good guy, you threw 3 punches helmets were off, you threw three punches, you need to get suspended. You need to get suspended. But let's bring Willie Rofe in now. We're now being joined by Levitan Pro Bowler, now Hall of Fame semifinalist, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
It's great to be on. I'm doing good. But let me add on to that, though. If the referee, now, from what they say, since we're talking about the Fenway situation, if he pointed to the Houston sideline and the referee is standing right there because the referee is standing on at the line of scrimmage on the side and he's watching Fenneman jock Andre Johnson in the face and he's repeatedly doing this, well, the referee should if his hand to the face, the referee should throw a penalty flag. And if he's repeatedly doing it, he should be throwing out the game anyway. So for Andre Johnson to get to the point where he wants to fight a guy, obviously it's been going on during the course of that football game, and this guy's repeatedly doing it over and over again. So, I mean, if you're in that situation, what are you guys going to do?
Well, first of all, before we move any further, Paul, again, let's congratulate Willie Rofe on what is hopefully going to be a Hall of Fame, election.
Well, no, thank you very much.
I'm going to tell you this, Willie, definitively, and I stand by what I say. When somebody throws a punch at you, whether it's on the field or off the field, you definitely have to protect yourself. But by no means should, like what Paul's point was, of you have guys now who are playing a sport for 5+10 years who are being fined $75,000 or $125,000 in 3 or 4 weeks. For playing the game the same way they played it in game one of this year. These two guys did something that's almost never been done in professional, like, football history. They had, like, it was a fight, and they got fined $25,000 and no suspension.
Well, you forgot I played Kyle Turley now. They didn't fight, but remember Kyle Turley ripped the guy's helmet off and threw his helmet, you know, wasn't punching at all per se, but that did happen. When I played with Turley. Now, we had Clarence Jones who threw punches, with helmets on. That's happened before in football. Guys have got to fight before. But, you know, helmets being snatched off and fighting like that, no, we haven't seen it. Hey, and if they're going to let that go on and not suspend the guy, we might see it again. But the problem I have with it is this. If the defensive back is repeatedly jamming him in the face, and the referee is standing there watching this and not throwing a flag or doing anything about it, then I blame part of this on the referees, too. I don't blame it. See, I think that's what went into account. If they go back and look at their film and they see this guy repeatedly jamming him in the face time after time again, I mean, if I'm Andre Johnson, you know, victory, enough is enough. You know, if the ref's not going to call it, then he has to take things into his own hands if this guy's repeatedly jamming him in the face, which he did on the line of scrimmage before Andre got off the ball.
Yeah, but Willie, I mean, I'm going to be interested to hear Paul's perspective on this. I think what happened there, though, for a guy of Andre Johnson's stature in this league to do what he did, to lose his cool to that level, I just think that, you know, get hands to the face. I don't disagree with you that you're right. The officials totally blew this the entire game, and tempers may flare, but to put that on national TV and especially lose your cool that way, I think you know, not the kind of player you definitely want to have it be known that he's in your head, and he got to you that bad. I felt as though maybe he should have taken himself out of the game for a play or two, or tried, you know, something different than just having a street fight in the middle of the game.
And he's supposed to be the leader on that, one of the leaders on that team. You have a great point that he could have been suspended and cost his team a game, but it is an NFL game, and the NFL owns the NFL Network. So for ratings, now you can't suspend Andre Johnson because guess what? He's playing Thursday night on the NFL Network, which is owned by who? The NFL. So don't think it's some logic going behind not suspending a guy when he's about to play a Thursday night game, and we're trying to get the ratings up for this game. Hey, if you everybody wants to see how Andre Johnson's going to play this week because, you know, of what happened last week. So the NFL knows that.
So basically, it's a conspiracy.
Well,
my
basically,
problem,
it's about money. And Andre Johnson is going on the field. Is going to be making more. The ratings are high. NFL makes more money than if he's off the field.
And I'm being serious when I say this, Willie and Paul. I mean, you don't get, and that's where you get the nomination on the first ballot, because it's the truth. Whether it's difficult to say that or not, what you said, Willie, is 1,000% the truth. Had this been on CBS or Fox or ESPN or NBC, he was suspended. But the fact is that the NFL Network, the ratings are horrible. I mean, nationally, everyone knows it's the one of the worst broadcasts, but they own the monopoly of Thursday night. And this is a primetime matchup on two pretty good teams. But if you take Andre Johnson off of the Texans, definitively they are not handicapped, they're crutched. And it is an Eagles team on a short week that had a bad game against Chicago. They don't need – the NFL didn't need that. And so – Andre Johnson gets to do something that no other player, and it's a bad precedent now that the commissioner set.
Okay, so what is the NFL Network going to do? Are they going to get away from Falk and Dion and whoever they have broadcasting the game and get more serious broadcasters in there to call the games? I mean, what does the NFL do?
But you know this.
Something's going to have to change.
You know this better than anybody coming from professional sports. The NFL Network, it's yet to be in their best interest to, I mean, look, I think that they have, I think Marshall Faulk has done very well. I think Deion Sanders has done very well on their network. But because they're only televising one game a week, they haven't yet seen the value in putting together a broadcast team to do just one game. And also, it's for them, they don't need to. They have the monopoly of their game, and they can put any product out they want. They own that channel. It's the NFL. It's not the NFL Network. It's the NFL that owns it. They put the NFL Network on it. And so they have a great year's worth of programming, but the broadcast sucks, and the commissioner, who will not, in my opinion, have any – there should be an inquiry into this. I mean, they're inquiring about Brett Favre and whatever happened 16 years ago. But the fact is, if this would happen any other time, and the precedence that's being set is basically next week, if you're – you know, if you get into a fight, if you're a first-time offender for a fight on national TV, you get a $25,000 fine.
What are you talking about Brett Favre 16 years ago?
Well, I'm not 16 years ago is a little bit long, but I'm saying in terms of the NFL has done, it's on a witch hunt for finding out what happened with Brett Favre and this lady. It happens two years ago. This to be on SportsCenter, to be on every Comcast, Sportsnet, this was not, in my opinion, what the NFL wants to project when they're also talking about player safety. Talk about how
it was on every late night show. It was on every late night show also. It wasn't just on sports shows. It was on Jay Leno. It was on it was on every. It was everywhere.
But if I'm Harrison, who gets fined again for, like Paul says, a bad hit, one of the questions I'm raising is, well, how unsafe is my hit in comparison to a direct blow to the face? I question again how this was, how to a certain degree how smart this was for the NFL.
Paul,
in reality, NFL's a business, and it's all about making money, and in terms of making money, they're going to do what they have to do to protect that product. And in terms of Andre Johnson playing on Thursday, you got to get him out there because it's all about the ratings. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I thought Andre Johnson should have been suspended. I thought Cortland Finnegan should have been suspended. But in reality, it comes down to dollars and cents. And if it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense. And obviously, it does make dollars, so it does make some sense. So, you definitely understand why the NFL did what it did in this particular situation. Do I agree with it?
It doesn't make them look a little biased. You know, you're right. It does.
Right.
You know, it does make it look like, okay, would the NFL have done it differently if it wasn't on that network, which, you know, does look a little shady. I understand what everybody's saying about it, but at the end of the line, we know that, and I played in the NFL. The NFL is, when you work in that environment, I mean, it is your job. Year round, and you do what the NFL says do, go by their rules and live by their boundaries, or don't play their game. I mean, the NFL runs a tight ship, and that's how they run it. I mean, the NFL, when you in that business, I mean, they own you to a certain point. I mean, you
right.
do what the NFL wants you to do, and you do it the way they want you to do it, and that's the way they run it.
Right. Fall in line or get out.
Or get out. Yeah. I mean, we pay you all this money. You're going to do what we tell you to do.
Right. And this week, actually, Willie, you had Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons, who are now 9-2, best record in the NFC, coming off an impressive performance against the Green Bay Packers. What do you think about these Falcons? Are they the team to beat in the NFC at this point?
I picked the Saints and the Titans getting all the way. I still say it's the Saints. I mean, they played an excellent game against the Saints, but look, if the Saints don't miss that field goal, they win that football game. I mean, Atlanta State, several games that have been very close games that could have gone either way, and they snuck out and got a win. So, I'm looking at the Saints, the way they're playing, the way that offense is playing, and they've gotten lucky, too. I mean, if Malcolm Jenkins doesn't make a great strip of the ball on Roy Williams, I mean, the Cowboys win that game. But you know, it's hard to win games on the road this league. I still say the Saints are the better team, and we'll see what happens when they go up and play Atlanta in Atlanta. We'll see how the Drew Brees and that offense plays. But right now, the way Drew Brees and the Saints are playing, I got to take them over the Falcons.
And I agree. I'm not in love with Atlanta myself. I mean, I saw what the Eagles did to them when they came to Philadelphia, and I'm just not in love with this team. I think record-wise, yes, they are the best team in the NFC, but in terms of talent, I think it is very wide open with the Eagles in the mix, and of course, your Saints are definitely in the mix, and you have the Bears, and of course, you still have the Green Bay Packers, and you still have the Giants there as well. So I think there's a lot of teams there, and right now, record-wise, they are the best team, but in terms of talent, in terms of when it's all said and done, I'm not too sure they will be in the Super Bowl. I want to move on to the Indianapolis Colts right now. They came off a 36-14 loss to the Chargers, and in that game, Peyton Manning threw four picks. With all the injuries, Joseph Addai, Austin Collie, Dallas Clark, the Colts are still tied with the Jaguars on top of the AFC South. But do you believe this team will make the playoffs?
I think they'll make the playoffs. Without a running game, like you said, if the remedy is to make Peyton Manning throw the ball and mix up his zone coverages and blitz him, and you know, if that works, I mean the Chargers have had their number the last couple of years also. We can say that too.
Right.
But if you can't run the ball, you're not going to be effective in the playoffs. And Peyton Manning, as great as he is, you have to have some semblance of a running game to do something in this league. If you can't run the ball, you're going to get in some trouble.
And Peyton Manning's only human if you look at him. I mean, he's missing a lot of his weapons. So, I mean, he's only human.
And he's getting older.
Right.
I'm going to say this. I think that they're missing Joseph Addai is I think a little bit more important for Peyton Manning than meets the eye. He's getting old. Everyone's getting older. But I mean, I think to put this on Peyton's shoulders, it's a younger receiving corps than he's ever had. I mean, and you're asking a guy to be perfect now for, what, 10-plus years. He's still having a productive year. It's just the offensive line is a younger offensive line. The receivers are younger. They're missing Dallas Clark, who's been out for the year, and they haven't had Joseph Addai in 5 weeks. And if you expect this team with what I think is a very average receiving core to continue to play at the level the Colts are known to play for, it's like saying that Brett Favre was going to repeat the season he had last year. You're going into it misguided.
I still have to stop you there. They still have Pierre Garçon. They still have Reggie Wayne there. So there's still some weapons there for Peyton Manning.
And Peyton Manning is still playing the team. Now, I didn't expect for Brett Favre to go from playing great last year to just letting the bottom fall out of the roof this year. I mean, this year Brett Favre just has not played well. You know, and last week they took the ball out of his hand and ran the ball about 40 times, which didn't let him throw the ball, which was smart, which the coach should have started doing the last of the week. But who would have predicted? I understand what you're saying. If Brett Favre's the quarterback he's supposed to be and that great a quarterback, look what Peyton Manning has been able to do with a young staff and without a running game. And, yeah, eventually he catches up with him and he turns the ball over 4 times. But we don't see him turn the ball over week in, week out. With Brett Favre this year, which we've seen him do before, he turns the ball over a whole bunch of times too many when he doesn't need to be turned over.
Well, I can say this, and Paul and I were very vocal in the offseason. I thought this year was going to be for Brett Favre. It was going to be a year. No one predicted, and certainly not I, that he was going to flop this bad. But I had no expectations that his numbers were going to remain close to the same. I thought it was going to be a huge step back. I didn't think he was going to play this poorly. And I think it's very evident, too, I do put a lot of this on Brett Favre's relationship with Brad Childress. I feel as though he came into this with a very selfish motivation. And I don't think, you know, him, because of the contentious relationship between the two, I think Favre, you know, never really let that offense become a unit. It was more about the Brett Favre show than it was about the Viking offense. I think last year, you know, he was more of a team player than he was this year.
Well, I disagree. I think on this point, I think what happened there was he didn't have Sidney Rice for a great part of the year. And that was his go-to guy last season. And I just think missing him was very big. And they really struggled with injuries throughout this year. Brett Favre has struggled with injuries throughout this year.
Well, he wasn't healthy.
But I just think Brett Favre is 41 years old. At some point, you got to start acting your age, and I think he is acting his age.
I think last year he played at a high level. He's been probably hurt. Brett Favre's been hurting for a while, but, you know, like you said, he's been hurt this year. And, you know, I just expect him to play better. But like you said, I mean, who else could have gotten away with what Brett Favre got away with? And Brett Favre saying he's going to play and not going to play and not showing up and doing what he did? Hey, Brett Favre's that great for Brett Favre, but like I said, I mean, if you expect anything different, and Brett Favre's going to go cast him checks every week, and he's going to go back to Mississippi on his 100-acre place where he lives down in Hattiesburg and be fine. But like you said, I mean, they're not going to let a lot of other quarterbacks get away with Brett Favre got away with. I'm not just talking about this year, for the last 3 years.
Right. And you can't expect to miss the all training camp and expect it not to catch up to you.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to get, I mean, I understand you're saying that Sidney Rice is out. Well, if Sidney Rice is going to be out and you know that, and like you said, he should have had that hip surgery done in the offseason, but you got to be, if I'm going to pay you $1 million a week, I expect you to be in one more three receivers in the offseason so you get your timing right, and do the stuff you need to do to prepare. You know, like you said, when Brad Childress is going up there, they're able to come back and doing all this stuff, and the guy that needs to show up to a week less than training camp, Yeah, he's not going to be able to do what he did last year. I mean, you know, obviously there's going to be different receivers and different personnel every year in the NFL. So, you know, I have to feel like if you're going to be a professional and you've got to dedicate yourself to playing, then you got to go dedicate yourself to playing, you know, especially when you are older and you've been away and you got the situation that you're under, you know. You know, that makes it very tough on that on the rest of those guys he's playing with.
Brett Favre's former team, the New York Jets, big game in the AFC. He's coming up this week, Monday Night Football. 9-2 Jets going up against the 9-2 Patriots in Foxborough. The Patriots, a team who I believe is the best team in the AFC. How do you see this game playing out, Willie?
I think the pressure's on the Patriots. The Patriots got beat handily by them early this year. Revis was playing on a hurt hamstring. He's healthy now. They got Kamari. I think the Jets go in there and knock them off. I think the Jets can go in there and knock them off. But, to me, the pressure is on the Patriots. The Patriots need to beat the Jets because the Jets have had their number. And like I said, the Jets are playing good. The problem I see with the Jets and Baltimore is sometimes the offense doesn't show up and they look stagnant. You know, I mean, if the Jets can go and establish the running game and control Brady and keep him off the field, let's say with an offense they get in the rhythm, I can see the Jets going there getting the victory.
I just think these past couple weeks, and we talked about this last week, Jeremy and I, the Jets are getting by beating, you know, these bad teams like the Lions, like the Browns, and like the Texans in last-second fashion. I mean, those are the teams that you go in and you beat up on and you beat bad. And the way I see it right now, I think the Jets are struggling. And I think even though they're winning these games,
The Browns beat New England? The Browns beat the crap out of New England, if I don't remember.
I can say this. I think though, and everyone knows, I am a big Sanchez fan. I think he's going to project to be a pretty good quarterback. But I think Willie's right that their offense, with all due reality, when they don't show up, it's going to put a lot of pressure on that team. And to think that you're going to be able to win every game in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, I know the Jets, I was listening to Santino Moss on some channel over the week, and they're on ESPN, he's making jokes about, you know, how they think that their offense doesn't have real problems. I think they have another thing coming. I mean, the offense, you don't want to be winning games because you're catching the ball in overtime and running 60 yards. That's not a good victory.
Well, this is going to be a good test for them. And there's one thing I can tell you about the Jets, too. The Jets are a veteran team and should know how to step it up in the big game. And they know that they can't go out there and play this team and go out there and expect to beat them in overtime and play the whole game, because if they do, New England will run them off that football field real fast in Foxborough. We know that. And didn't he top Brett Favre's record of winning 25 straight home games? I think Brady's won 25 straight home games, which is incredible. So I still feel that the pressure is on New England, because New England has something to prove against the Jets, to show them that they can't come up in there and beat them in Foxborough. And I feel like the pressure's not on the Jets, the pressure's on New England.
And I see what you're saying, Willie, but I think that while the pressure may be on New England, I think New England's going to respond very well in this football game. I just think this is a team offensively that's playing very well. And I think with the Jets' offense, I don't think they'll be able to muster up enough points to beat this Patriots team. I just think right now with Belichick and Brady and what they're doing in New England, I think right now this is the best team in the AFC, and I think this is the team that will win on Monday night against the New York Jets.
We will all be watching, and we will talk about this after the game, but I'm picking right now the Jets for an upset.
All right, well, we'll see. And I'm going with the Patriots here. I'm definitely going with the Patriots. And Willie, this past Monday night, Cardinals quarterback Derek Anderson, with the team getting blown out by the 49ers, was seen laughing on the sidelines after the game. Anderson went off on the media. As a whole, do you think this whole situation is a little overblown?
I think it's overblown. You know, for Derek Anderson, you know, the guy seems like a good guy. You know, he's had a lot of losing in his career and with Cleveland, and then, you know, he's been a guy that could have been a backup. He had one good year. He had one good year when Bradley Edwards had that offset when he made the Pro Bowl in Cleveland, and they put up those good numbers in Cleveland. I think he wanted to start on that football team.
Yeah, he went. That's the year he did go to the team.
Yeah, about three or four years ago when Bradley Edwards had that great year, his breakout year and everything. But other than that, Derek Ernest hadn't done too much. Well, you know, if your team's getting blown out, you know, normally I wouldn't want to be smiling on the sideline or get the cameras catch me smiling on the sideline. I understand they were in a little conversation or whatever. And in the NBA, I see a lot of guys smiling sometimes on during the basketball games. But, you know, in NFL, you know, that's kind of frowned upon to be smiling and doing the blowout. I mean, maybe the guy said something that, you know, they were joking about that happened during the course of the game that they were laughing about. But I think it's been overblown, but I wouldn't want to be caught smiling or having a laugh in the middle of a blowout. You know, I wouldn't want that to happen.
We're talking to Willie Rope, 11-time Pro Bowler, now Hall of Fame semifinalist. And, Willie, it's down to 26, down with guys like Deion Sanders, Jerome Bettis, Marshall Faulk, Chris Carter, to name a few. You have an opportunity here, Willie. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
You know, I was very happy about it. You know, my agent is Lamont Smith, and it's kind of ironic that me and Jerome Bettis signed with Lamont. You know, we were two, I think, one of the top first agents to have two top 10 picks, and went to Denver and trained together and went to combine, and we bought a house in Denver and used to train together, and, you know, both played 13 years. So, you know, I'm just happy, very happy for Jerome and for us to, you know, kind of start off me going to the Saints and him going in the NFC West it was the LA Rams at the time, and we went up there and started off 5-0 and he had his first 100-yard game. And then when he came to the Super Bowl, if you remember, Jerome Bettis was a very good back. You know, it's an outstanding rookie year. He had his first 200-yard game against us. They won that game in the Superdome. And, you know, I just remember getting off to a real good start my rookie year. And, you know, they were talking about me being rookie of the year. And I don't know. I think Jerome might have gotten rookie of the year. If I can't remember, I was rookie of the year. But he had 1,300-some yards that year. And, you know, for his size, have that light feet and agility and be a good athlete he was. And you know, I just wanted to get out there and play as hard as I could. And for me to start all 16 games and not miss a down my rookie year, you know, I'm just very happy that I got off the start I got off to and continue to carry that on. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens on this father's list and how everything works out. But like I said, when you get in the semifinals list and get in the company of those guys, you know, your first year out, you know, that's a real positive sign.
And, Willie, we definitely are wishing or hoping that everything works out with that, and definitely are rooting for you to make the Hall of Fame, Willie. Willie, we definitely thank you for stopping by, man. It was greatly appreciated. We always love when you stop by and talk football. Good luck with the
man,
Hall of Fame.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to talking to y'all after the Jets go up in surprise.
It won't happen, but we'll definitely talk to you about it when it happens.
All right, Jerry.
All right, take care, sir.
All right, thank you.
Willie Rose, 11-time Pro Bowler, now has an opportunity for the Hall of Fame. We are now being joined by LPGA member, actress, motivational speaker, and author, Robin Aikens. Robin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Did I miss anything else? I mean, it's a long list there with you.
Just trying to, you know, do some. I'm also a violinist, so I'm kind of multitasking.
And you're definitely a very talented individual. And as I was reading your bio, I saw that you were introduced to the sport of golf at the age of six. And on your website, you talked about the importance of exposing children to various activities. How has being exposed to golf shaped your life?
Wow. My mom introduced me to the sport at the age of six. And actually, I was in a junior golf club called the Bobolink here in Chicago. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Here in Chicago, there's a junior golf club called the Bobolink. And it was very instrumental for me to be able to participate in a sport with other children my own age. And I think if I had gone out maybe with potentially with just with my mom, maybe I wouldn't have been able to experience, you know, the level of competitiveness that it was, and really just really having fun, because that's basically what it was when I was out there with the other children when I started. It was basically having fun, and then you got into that competitive mode, and when I got that first trophy, of course, you want to get the next trophy and so on and so forth. And by the time I was 17 years old, I had 25 trophies for golf and awards. And so it was just, you know, really important for parents these days, because there are some free programs that are out there. I mean, I offer junior golf camp here in Chicago that's free of charge to inner city youth, and actually won about four awards for it. So, you know, it's just important for parents to be resourceful, to find out those opportunities, and to really get their children involved, because even though golf is an expensive sport, you know, we can minimize the expenses by, you know, doing our research and homework and things of that nature.
And Robin, I want to go to when Tiger Woods back in 1997, when he won the Masters. There was a sense that many African Americans would start picking up the game of golf. Did you find that to be the case, or are you finding that to be the case now?
Yes, really. I hear a lot of people that actually say that they actually started watching the sport that, you know, did not even pick up the game of golf because of the expense of it, but because of the momentum and the drive and that excitement that Tiger brought to the game. I mean, everybody was, you know, just, you know, on pins and needles, basically trying to watch to see really what Tiger was doing, just like Michael Jordan did for the sport of basketball, Tiger did for the sport of golf. So, you know, it got a lot of black people interested in just, you know, just seeing, because, of course, you know, we love competitive sports, and to see, you know, a fellow black person out there that's, you know, really just competitive and winning really brought a lot of people to the game. And then a lot of children were looking up to Tiger as well because of the fact that, you know, he is such a philanthropic person and doing a lot in the communities and things of that nature. So that really brought that interest there.
Well, you know, Robin, you bring up an interesting point, and one of the things that's always, it's interesting when you speak to, especially athletes, they recognize the importance of getting involved in sports at a very young age, and you make the correlation in golf of, you know, the one issue of the entrance into golf can be perceived as an expensive sport, but is that sometimes... does that present a problem when you try to enlighten people about such a wonderful sport, when in reality, though, like everything in life, there's ways around that. You can have youth clubs. There's many public courses all over the country. And so has golf, in a way, gotten a bad rap for being known as maybe something that certainly it can be an expensive sport, but it doesn't mean that it's just an expensive sport.
Right, exactly, because we don't want to ever give anybody, you know, discouragement from actually, you know, picking up the game, because there, like you said, that there are other opportunities of going to, you know, I always tell my clients to go to a garage sale or go to, you know, a used, you know, store or something, or even getting, you know, hand-me-down clubs and just mix and matching clubs that they may have that, you know, family members or relatives may have. And because, I mean, of course, we know that clubs can go upwards. I mean, I paid, my mom, she paid $1,000 just for a set of irons for me, and that didn't even include my my woods, and that was when I was actually playing competitively in high school. But of course, you know, like you said, well, if we have these, we find these resources available and going to these public or municipal courses and actually, you know, doing a group rate, even with taking golf lessons as an individual, you know, taking a lesson is more expensive than taking it as a group. So if you can get a group of people together, it kind of minimizes the cost to actually learn the sport, because that's what I did pretty much over the whole course of the summer, was offer group lessons for adults that, you know, was less expensive. Because if an individual were to take 6 one-hour courses with me, that would be close to $700. But if they were to take it as a group, 6 lessons would be less than $200. So we definitely have to, you know, get out there and kind of find out.
It's important, and we're certainly going to make a segue into the next piece of Robin Aikens, and that is golf, obviously, for you, because it's such an individualized sport, and I couldn't agree more with you of enlightening and broadcasting in terms of an, not just from an athletic prowess, but what it can do for you off of, quote-unquote, the field. Speak about how golf has helped you in becoming a motivational speaker, in writing a book, because the sport depends on you, not you and your teammates. Sure, it's important to have a people around you, but it's you and the mindset that your ability to control yourself in the pressure when you had a good shot, when you had a bad shot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's one of the things, I mean, you really brought up a key point into the character education traits that golf actually teaches, because golf teaches integrity. It teaches sportsmanship. It teaches honesty. And it teaches just to be able to be persistent. And, you know, because, of course, if you have a bad day, it doesn't mean that the next day is going to be a bad day. And that's just like a parallel with life. You know, we all have bad days, but, you know, we have to basically, you know, get up, dust ourselves off, and be able to go out again and tackle it with a fresh mindset, and being able to, you know, go out there and knowing that we can do better than we did before, the day before, or even while you're even playing the game of golf, even if you have a bad shot, you have to forget about that shot, because your next shot really depends on, you know, your frame of mind and the mindset of where you are in that moment. And that's one thing that, you know, with a team, of course, you're always, if you're playing a team sport, you're always relying upon your teammates to actually,
right,
you know, to score or to get. But, of course, with golf, we have to, you know, really think single-mindedly. And, of course, like you said, that kind of, you know, segues into, you know, the motivational realm, because with me growing up, even though I learned the basics of the game of golf, you know, the swing, the grip, this and that, but, you know, the junior golf club, they really, really focused in on those character education traits, and it really made me become a better person because of the fact that I wanted to be an honest person, and I wanted to be, you know, very persistent and very, you know, just basically to be able to, you know, persevere or be able to, you know, to go back and tackle, you know, my life with a different mindset, a positive mindset, to know that I could, you know, run this race and run it, you know, to the course of, you know, just being great. And that was really one of the things that, you know, my mom and also the women with the Chicago Women's Golf Club, this is actually their brainchild. And actually, to bring some history to the Chicago Women's Golf Club, they are actually the second oldest black golf club that was founded in the United States. and they were founded in 1937. In 1936, the Wake Robin Golf Club, which is in Washington, D.C., they were the oldest African-American women's golf club that was founded in the United States. And guess what? The LPGA was founded in 1950. So you can go figure that black women, even long before Tiger Woods, you know, black people have actually been playing. And actually the golf tee was invented by a black man. So, you know, even though that Tiger Woods also, you know, we credit Tiger for a lot of the accomplishments that he's made thus far, but there, you know, there were trailblazers that came before him. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, these guys actually, you know, had to carpool together, and they were actually discriminated against by playing the game of golf and golf tournaments. So we have to really, really, you know, give homage to the people that actually came before Tiger.
And that's very interesting. It's very interesting that you would say that. And we do tend to forget some of the history of golf, and it's weird. It sounds like, to me, it's kind of like a rock and roll type of thing, where rock and roll was kind of started by blacks, but eventually was taken over by white people. So it's kind of interesting when you say that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Robin, speaking of which, you are one of six African-American women to hold a membership to the LPGA. I can't even say it. What does this membership mean to you?
Wow. This membership means the world to me, because currently there are no black women that are on the LPGA tour at this present time.
Wow.
There are no black women on tour. It's really being dominated by Asians and, of course, you know, white population. But the Asians are really, really doing well on the LPGA tour. And really just to get, you know, my feet in the door and just to say that I am a member, even though, I mean, of course, my dream of a, you know, as a young girl, I mean, I was born in housing projects in Chicago, the Robert Taylor homes, and, you know, moved to Inglewood, which is one of the, still one of the roughest neighborhoods in Chicago. But, you know, never born with a silver spoon in my mouth, but my mom introduced me to this wonderful sport at such a young age. And, you know, I just, as a young girl watching television, even though I was playing golf and watching the tour players, I mean, that was like a dream of mine to actually be on tour. And even though, you know, because of this and that, I didn't make it, I still had this burning desire to go back and to, you know, just to get my status and to get my card. And it meant, it really meant the world. I mean, it still means the world to me because, you know, my membership has actually, you know, gained me access to be able to be a part of a lot of different events, doing golf clinics for a lot of different well-known people,
right.
Being put on panels with these people, motivational panels, sports panels with these people. I mean, Dwayne Wade, I was on three sports panels this past summer with him, you know, doing golf clinics for Magic Johnson and walking 18 holes with Michael Jordan in the Bahamas, and things of that nature, being interviewed, you know, on your show, of course, and also, you know, on the Steve Harvey Morning Show, and I thank you so much for this opportunity. You know, so it's just opened up a lot of doors, and I think that, you know, for me, just really going on a road that's less traveled, and that's the way that we can really gain recognition for ourselves, is to be able to hone in onto this, you know, the God-given talents that, you know, we have within us, and be able to, you know, go full force and execute, you know, the gifts that God has given us, because, you know, Proverbs 18:16 says your gift will make room for you and place you before great men. So I just wanted to be able to, you know, be able to show, you know, my talents and my gifts to, you know, to really the world.
Was there any resistance when you first joined the LPGA? Was there any resistance
from myself or from other people?
from other members of the LPGA?
Well, I wouldn't say that there was really any resistance, but I think once I got in to the LPGA and I was able to showcase not only that I'm a a golfer, but being able to talk about other things that I'm doing with writing my books, and I'm a classically trained violinist. There was this one lady who actually said to me, your IQ must be very high. And I think she was really mentioning to the fact that, of course, me being black, and I was the only black person there, we have to go through, certifications where we have to fly down to various places like Florida. At that time, I was in Orlando. And, for her to say, it really wasn't, I wouldn't say it was like, insulting to my race that she would say that, but I think that I know she was giving me a compliment, but I think she was kind of downplaying the fact that, that while you really stand out amongst, your race, and I don't know, it kind of made me feel a little uncomfortable. But, we just have to keep, just show, let our light shine, I guess. Just like that song, I remember showing this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And, we have to kind of, remember that and to let, the light that God has given us to shine.
And when you, before you said that, that was the song that actually came to my head when you were talking about that. And you are a motivational speaker. You trained under the great Les Brown. And I've always wondered, with a motivational speaker, what motivates the motivational speaker? Who motivates you? What motivates Robin Aiken, the motivational speaker?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that really knowing my history and really knowing just the deep, lineage of where black people have actually come from where just looking at all of our struggles and all of our, just dating back to slavery and pre-slavery and, just learning about, the slave castles and how, the lynchings and things of that nature. Of course, I definitely, we can't, hold like grudges or anything like that, but it's for us to really learn from and really see that, if we have if we can survive that type of treatment and then to really make it in society and make a difference and really make a difference not in our own lives but make a difference in somebody else's life. Because from just the remarks that I've gotten from children that I've taught, and I've taken children out of town on golfing trips, and one little girl said this was the best weekend of her life. And, to hear that from someone and just to know where we have come from and how much we've struggled, and to know that you've made a difference in somebody's life by the sacrifices that you've made to become the person that you are, and that you have the ability to shape and change someone else's life because your life has been shaped and your life has been changed. That is priceless. That is totally priceless.
And Robin, Paul makes me laugh when he talks about the motivational speaker staying motivated. What's interesting is your ability to do this while you're an active athlete. And I say it because very rarely do you see prominent athletes breaking out of the mold and speaking about, not just the positives but the realities of life and being more of a vocal, a voice, which to a certain degree can be challenging because being a motivational speaker while you're actively involved in your profession or in another profession may lend critics if you're not performing as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you can't deny, I can't deny who I am. I can't suppress, who I am. And I can't suppress the fact that I believe that I have been given grace because of the fact, because of the struggles and the trials that I have gone through with my life and the sacrifice that I have gone through to get to this, you know, point in my life. I mean, I've given up so much. I mean, I quit my job. I have 2 master's degrees, and I quit my job to turn pro and I was, you know, relentless in the fact of not going back to work until I got this status. I mean, this LPGA status meant that much to me that I was able to sacrifice something that really, you know, put, you know, food, you know, on the table and you know, just a lot of things. I watched a lot of things, you know, go, you know, in terms of material possessions that I've had just to, you know, be able to obtain, you know, this status. But, I mean, I've gained so much more from it, you know. I mean, I've had, you know, just my house went into foreclosure proceedings, and you know, I lost, you know, vehicles because of the fact of me being relentless, you know, having 2 master's degrees and standing, you know, in the welfare line to get, you know, food for my children and things of that nature. People calling you crazy because of the fact, you know, that they're looking at you because, you know, you have 2 master's degrees and, you know, looking at you funny because of the fact that, man, why are you doing this? You know, but, I mean, right now, I mean, I'm living my dreams. I'm obtaining contracts, you know, for my business. I'm also a business owner. You know, I live in a duplex condo with, you know, 2 fireplaces right now, a brand new construction. You know, right now I have a Range Rover. I'm able to sit on panels with, you know, Dwayne Wade and doing clinics for Magic Johnson and things of this nature. So even though that little sacrifice, you know, put me back a little bit, I've gained so much more from, you know, the experience, and now I'm able to talk about it, and I'm able to, you know, find peace with what I've done, and people being in the admirable stage right now, the same people who actually talk negatively about me, you know, these people are coming to me for help, and I feel, and of course, you know, of course, I am helping these people because, you know, you can't, you know, fault. I mean, these are close people in my family that I'm helping and watching, you know, them struggle right now. But, you know, I had to keep in my mind, you know, from me being mentored by Les Brown, that you have to go through something in order to get something on the other side. You have to make that sacrifice to be able to come out on the other end and be successful. And so, you know, I just kept that in the forefront of my mind as I was going through, you know, the trials and the tribulations. And, you know, being able to be featured in, you know, Jet Magazine in April, you know, my publicist was able to, Lynn Jeter, she was able to help me to, you know, get into Jet Magazine, and that's, you know, an international publication. So, I mean, you know, for all those people who are out there who, you know, really want to do something, you know, don't worry about, you know, what it is that you are lacking or what it is that you, you know, may have to lose because of this. But once you come out on the other end, I mean, it's going to be so sweet. You know, and even right now, of course, all of us have trials and tribulations. But,
right,
you know that this is, that we're doing something. And really, my whole motivation was that I know that I'm helping somebody. And one of Les Brown, one of his quotes is, help somebody and help yourself. And that's the main thing.
And it sounds like essentially what you're saying is a lot of times in life, in many ways, we kind of go through a little hell to kind of get to that place
yeah,
where we need to be or where we're destined to be.
Exactly.
And Robin, I want to go to your book now. You've written 5 books, including your latest book, which is Focus on Your Future for Teens, 10 Bold Steps to a Brighter Future.
tell us about this book.
Well, this book, and actually when I mentioned that I quit my job, I was actually teaching school. My master's are in elementary education and educational administration. So, you know, as I was teaching school, I just had this thought in my mind that, you know, I didn't want to be limited to just being influencing just children in my classroom, just the 25 or 30 children in my classroom. That, you know, one day I was looking out the window while my children were on break. They were probably at gym or something like that, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, there's a whole world out there, and I had to just stop and just think globally, and knowing that if you can make a difference in these children's lives, and I'm telling you that, I mean, my students, I mean, I am in contact with them on Facebook. You should, I mean, I'm telling you, they're like 20 now, and they have been saying, I've been trying to find you. You are the best teacher to me. You motivated me. You took me to the Bulls game. You did this and that. But basically, the book is called Focus on Your Future for Teens, 10 Bold Steps to a Brighter Future. And, like the first chapter is, you know, how to focus and letting children know how to really, you know, hone in and focus on, you know, a goal that they want. And then it talks about, you know, having that positive attitude through education, being persistent, you know, committing to a greater purpose. It talks about financial tips or financial literacy for a brighter future. Picking your friends wisely, choosing your friends, birds of a feather flock together. It talks about having a healthy mind, a healthy body, a healthy lifestyle so that we can make, you know, positive choices and great choices in our life. And then the last chapter talks about conflict resolution and how we can, you know, basically kind of stop this violence, because, of course, I live in Chicago, and we have been hit hard with a lot of violence within our youth.
Violence.
Yes. And so it just talks about, you know, how to resolve a conflict before it kind of escalates to that point. And I just thought, you know, that, you know, the things that I learned as a child, not only through the sport of golf, but just through, you know, just studying and being, you know, a studious person. I mean, there were a lot of things that were happening in my household that were not, you know, favorable. I didn't know my father growing up. You know, I witnessed, you know, domestic violence growing up in the household, and having to go to school the next day after an argument or after, you know, the police had been at my home and things of that nature. But being able to focus and to be able to focus within, like, the chaotic situation. And a lot of times our young people and just people in general cannot focus in the chaotic situation. And it's just basically, right, you know, teaching them how to, you know, really hone in and really, you know, tap into themselves. And of course, you know, I don't want to go into teaching a spiritual realm, but, you know, just tapping into, you know, our being, you know, the supreme being and things of that nature. But I definitely don't talk about that in the book, but of course that is important.
And Robin, and listening to you, and I have some dealings with kids as well. I work also with alternative youth, that kids who go to alternative schools and everything. And listening to you and dealing with some of these kids, I realized that I think the biggest problem, and it's just my opinion, the biggest problem, I think, is the lack of parental supervision and just the lack of good parents. And there is an epidemic of fatherlessness in the African-American community, and it's definitely a problem. It's definitely a problem. And you're seeing some of the seeds being sown by some of the behavior we're seeing from some of the teenagers out here.
Mm-hmm. And I know I say it sounds kind of corny, but, I mean, this is like some things that I did because, of course, I didn't have my father in the home, whatever. And, you know, I would latch on to different characters, you know, like the Cosby Show, of course. That was like, you know, a big show at the time when I was growing up. I don't know how old you are, but, you know, basically looking at those characters and just, you know, just picking out, you know, those character traits and just looking for those traits in people that, you know, may be in your school, maybe a teacher, or maybe, you know, that person at the corner store that might give you, you know, some positive words or things of that nature. Because, of course, we, you know, everybody's situation is different, but we have to find, you know, somebody who believes in us. And that's, you know, why it's so important for us to be mentors, you know, to these young people. And even though, you know, I was a classroom teacher, you know, I believe that I was more or less like a mentor to these kids, because for them to, you know, tell me that they've been looking for me and they, you know, I mean, I used to coach Division I golf. And one of my former golf students actually found me on Facebook, and she's now married. You know, her husband used to play in the NBA, and he's playing in Italy right now. And, you know, met her husband, and he was saying, wow, she always talks about you. But I think that, you know, mainly, you know, we have to be, you know, become that mentor to these young people. And, you know, just like with the Susan Taylor campaign and other people who have, you know, are really beefing up, you know, a mentorship campaign, you know, we have to know that, you know, we're all in this together. It takes a village to raise a child, not just, you
right.
know, even if people do have those both, you know, both parents in their household, you know, one of those parents may not be, you know, the quote unquote perfect, you know, nothing is perfect, you know, no,
right.
So we, you know, definitely have to seek out, you know, that's what I would tell, and even for adults as well, you know, to seek out mentors. I'm still seeking mentors out right now, even in my adult life.
And it's funny you said that. My pastor always says that you should have somebody that you speak into, somebody that's on your level, and then somebody who is speaking into you. So it's very interesting that you said that.
Exactly.
Now, Robin, where can we find information about you? Where can we find these books that you have out now?
Well, right now I can give my website, robinakins.com, or you can call 773-382-6955, and we will actually do some pre-ordering right now. The book is basically, you know, 773-382-6955.
All right, and make sure you call that number if you want to get a book. And then, Robin, I mean, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and you're a motivational speaker, and speaking to you, it makes me motivated. I mean, I definitely see why you're doing you're doing. You're definitely doing a good job of it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I truly do.
And again, you can go to robinakins.com, where you can purchase this book and find out some information about this this spectacular woman. I mean, this is a woman who has done a lot of things, and her story is very inspiring.
Thank you so much.
Robin, we thank you for stopping by, and we definitely appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, too. Bye-bye.
Robin Akins, LPGA member, actress, motivational speaker, author, you name it, musician, you name it, she's done it. And she's worked hard at getting things done. And definitely inspiring listening and hearing her story. If you'd like to chime in, the number to call is 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/vegan. That's blogtalkradio.com/vegan. And the next 15 minutes, I want to talk about LeBron James. Big game tomorrow night at the Q, Quicken Loan Center in Cleveland, Ohio. The return of the King, LeBron James, returns to Cleveland with the Miami Heat, a team that is struggling right now. The team is not, at this point, living up to the expectations. You had the situation where players were openly questioning the head coach, Eric Spoelstra, and wondering whether or not he is the right guy for the job. I mean, so you're getting that right now, and you're hearing all these things. And this is a team that, hey, Jeff Van Gundy said in the summertime, 70 wins, 70-plus wins. This team can win 33-plus games in a row, breaking the Lakers' record. I mean, this team can do a lot of things, but right now this team is only 11-8. But, I mean, 3 games over .500. And right now this is not what everybody signed up for. We didn't sign up for 11-8 at this point. And no one signed up for that. But right now they are 11-8. And you look at it, Cleveland is 7-10. So Cleveland right now is about 2.5 games behind this Miami Heat team. So could it happen? Could the Cleveland Cavaliers have a better record than the Miami Heat when it's all said and done? I doubt it, but anything's possible. But the reality of this, man, and, you know, a lot of questions. How, you know, what kind of signs are you going to see? Will LeBron James do the whole chalk thing? I mean, you're hearing a lot of things regarding this situation. And I'm looking forward to it, man. And, you know, LeBron is coming home, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Well, you've gone on and on and on about what a big game it is. But, I mean, I really wonder. I'm going to challenge that. Is it really a big game, Paul? For who?
I think it's a very big game. I mean,
what's
a big game,
Paul?
For the league, obviously. It's a big game for the league. It's a big regular season game. It's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere. And if you're a Cleveland Cavaliers, this is your NBA Finals. This is your playoffs, because you may not sniff the playoffs. So this is your opportunity here to spoil the Miami Heat team. And right now, you know, I'm a guy who I didn't want LeBron to leave, obviously. I wanted him to stay in Cleveland because I just thought that's where he belonged. And right now, if you look at this Miami Heat team, they lost Udonis Haslem possibly for the rest of this year. So that's a big piece they're missing. And you look at it, I mean, many of the people are saying that LeBron James and Dwayne Wade are having a hard time playing with one another. Both need the ball in their hands to be effective, and both are not what you call spot-up shooters. So there could be a problem there. And granted, you have to look at this. Dwayne Wade missed all of preseason. So right now, in a lot of ways, these guys are playing together and trying to learn one in each other's game. But I just think right now, I mean, if you look at it, and we talked about in the summertime, both you and I, we both said that we didn't expect this team to go to the NBA Finals. And we also said that we didn't necessarily believe that this was the best team in the East, even on paper. And you look at Orlando is also on top of the Eastern Conference, along with the Boston Celtics. Still early, obviously. But if you look at it, those two teams, if you look at it, are obviously the class of the Eastern Conference. They're obviously the class of the Eastern Conference. And right now, Miami is actually third in their division, behind the Atlanta Hawks and behind the Orlando Magic. So if you look at that and you look at this situation, I'm saying to myself right now, I mean, record-wise, the Miami Heat are basically the fourth, fifth best team in the conference. And, again, it's still early, but record-wise, they're the fifth best team in the conference. But all in all,
right,
when this whole thing shakes out, obviously you're going to expect the Heat to at least get to the third spot, if not the second spot. But 70 wins, obviously, is out of the question. That's definitely out of the question. And you definitely do not see that happening, and I don't see 70 wins happening for this Miami Heat team. They may not even get to 60. Maybe. But with all the talent, with Bosh, with LeBron, with Dwayne Wade, you would think they would get this thing right and ultimately do what they have to do and ultimately compete in the Eastern Conference and do some big things in the Eastern Conference. But the way I look at tomorrow's game, and it's going to be exciting, definitely exciting to see the reaction of the fans when LeBron comes back to town. It's going to be exciting to see the reaction of his teammates, the reaction of the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know they're going to be ultra motivated for this game. They're going to be super motivated for this game. I mean, and this is a game that if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, this is like your NBA Finals. This is like your playoffs. This game is that big for you. You want to show LeBron James too, like, yo, we can still play some ball here too. You want to show LeBron that. You want to show LeBron that. And you want to show that Miami Heat team that. And it should be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But I expect a spirited effort and a spirited game. You definitely expect a big-time effort from the Cavaliers. And I'm expecting a big effort from the Miami Heat. But this game will be close. This will be a close game. And I think that the Miami Heat will lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think the Miami Heat will lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think that Cleveland will win their NBA Finals game, tomorrow night against the Miami Heat. This is how big it is for them, and I think they will win it tomorrow.
Did you really just do that, Paul? You really?
A, you cut me off, and B, you actually just said that you're comparing this to an NBA Finals game?
I'm comparing it to an NBA Finals game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I do believe,
Paul,
that the Cleveland Cavaliers...
With what talent?
Well, it's about a team. Cleveland is 7-10. They beat the Boston Celtics this year. They're beating the Boston Celtics, something that the Miami Heat have not done. They've had two shots.
Do we have to end every show, Paul, raising the question of if you are in desperate need of prayer? Is that going to be our new theme?
I think we all need prayer, and prayer is definitely an important part of all.
So
the
is that
life
your goal to
be.
Remind the listeners every week that prayer is important by saying something that
requires us to think
about if you need prayer?
All the listeners, please pray for me because I need it, and hopefully I'll pray for you as you pray for me. And
how can you compare this to a championship game 7?
I'm talking about from a Cleveland Cavalier perspective. This is a championship game for them.
You're not 20 games into the season, Paul. No.
This is a big game. So you're not going to watch?
I'm going to watch it, Paul, but I can certainly tell you right now, if I had to miss this game, I could miss this because at the end
this
of the day...
This is must-see.
No, what would be must-see is going to be when, in my opinion, where you're going to see must-see is in the latter part of the season when and if the Heat, if they were still, not playing well, and Cleveland can act as a spoiler to their playoff either run or
season. But this is the first time that LeBron James and the Miami Heat.
It's historic, Paul, but it's not a big game.
This is a big game. I disagree with you wholeheartedly. This is arguably the best player in the game who left his team. And that rarely happens. The best player in the game, arguably, rarely leaves his team in his prime. He rarely leaves. But it happened. It happened here with LeBron James. And now he's returning to the place that he left. An Ohio boy, LeBron James, is returning to the franchise that many believe that he spit in the face of when he did that decision show. Many feel he deserted this city. He deserted this state. He just threw it right in their face. You know what? I am taking my talent to South Beach. And I'm putting it on national TV. I'm putting this on national TV in your face. Now what you going to do? I'm LeBron James, baby. And that's basically the attitude he had. I'm LeBron James, and you're not. And guess what? As a free agent, he is entitled to do that. He is entitled to do that, so I'm not mad at him for that. But again, if I'm going to break up with my wife, I'm not going to do it on national TV. I'm not going to embarrass her on national TV. And that's what LeBron James essentially did.
Paul,
he embarrassed.
How is that making this game liken that of a game seven
just,
of an NBA?
I just pointed it out. Why?
No.
I believe. Why? I'm not
first
saying
of all, you
this
would
is equivalent.
Break up with your wife.
I'm not
you
saying.
Would break up
I'm
with
saying,
your wife over
I'm
money.
Saying this is. I'm saying this is equivalent to an NBA Finals game for the Cleveland Cavaliers because they will not see the playoffs more than likely. So this is an NBA Finals game for them. This is like an NBA Finals game for them. This is their championship. And I'm just saying that with that being said, it's going to be a great atmosphere and exciting times. I just repeated it. You have arguably the best player in the game who left his team in his prime. That does not happen. You had a guy who was an Ohio boy who jilted the Cleveland Cavaliers on national TV and told them, you know what, I am taking my talents to the beach. That's what he told them on national TV. Again, basically, it's like me jumping on national TV.
You want people in Oklahoma City to care about this. You want people in Boston to care about this.
They will. You care. I care. We care. And we want to watch tomorrow.
You know, me and Natalie Merchant. Me and Natalie Merchant. We don't care. And I'm gonna ask people. You know, does anyone care? Does anyone care?
Me and all of Cleveland, all of Miami, Charles, Kenny, EJ, the boys in TNT, we will be watching and we will be excited.
I'm gonna get myself to the studio, Paul.
And we will be watching with bells on. I will have my bells on and I will be watching this particular game. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And if you're not, then you're stupid.
Well, label me stupid, Paul.
And, you know, you will be watching tomorrow, and I will be watching along with the Eagles game. I will be clicking back and forth, but I think I'm going to start at the Quicken Loan Center with LeBron. I want to see the introductions. I want to see if he splashes the chalk in the air. I want to see what kind of reaction he gets from the Cleveland fan base. I want to see all that. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Be there. Watch it. Enjoy. LeBron James returns to Cleveland.
Eagles game. You know, we'll be in the Eagles mode, and then we're going to turn right over to Comcast SportsNet to hear the great governor of this city make a fool of himself. I've just decided I'm boycotting an NBA Finals game.
You can't be a governor of a city. So let's correct that.
Correct it, Paul. Correct that and correct this.
I might be a dummy,
but you know what? I feel sorry for you that you have that little respect for the NBA Finals.
I'm not. You're obviously misunderstanding what I'm saying. So maybe I need to slow it down and be clear.
Yeah.
With you. I am saying that this is the equivalent to an NBA Finals game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you understand that now?
I can't understand it because I don't speak idiot, Paul.
I might be able to get it to you in the box, but that's the best I can do for you. That's the best I can do for you.
No hablas the idiot.
So, I will be watching, okay, if that's what you want to say, I will be watching the NBA Finals game tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it.
You boycott the Eagles?
I will be watching the Eagles as well. I will be watching both. I will definitely be watching both. And, you know, this has been a fun show, fun hour and a half. It's always great to be joined by Willie Rofe, a guy right now who's on the verge of a Hall of Fame, possible Hall of Fame induction. Right now, he's one of the 26 semifinalists, so we'll see what happens. I believe in January, when they whittle the number down to 15, I believe the number is, that should be interesting to see if Willie's still on the list. We want to thank Willie Rofe for joining us, and we also want to thank Robin Akins for joining us. Remember, go to robinakins.com where you can find her book, Focus on Your Future for Teens, 10 Bold Steps to a Brighter Future. Please make sure you go by there and get the book and support her, because she definitely has a great story, and she definitely has a story to tell to all of us. And we want to thank Robin Akins. We want to thank Willie Rose. We want to thank you, the listener, for listening. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/GameGet. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gann.